Hello, and welcome to BJGP Interviews. My name is Nada Khan, and I'm one of the associate editors of the BJGP. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this podcast today. In today's episode, we talk to Laiba Hussain, a This Institute Research Fellow and PhD candidate at the Nuffield Department of Primary Care Health Sciences at the University of Oxford. We're talking to her about a paper she's recently published here in the BJGP titled Developing User Personas to Capture Intersecting Dimensions of Disadvantage in Marginalized Older Patients, a Qualitative Study. So thanks, Laiba, for joining me here to talk about this paper. I think this paper will be of particular interest to people who are working with disadvantaged and marginalized populations in practice. And we've heard a lot about the challenges around equity of remote and digital services through people that we've spoken to here in the podcast. But I wonder if you could first talk us through a bit about the background to the study. Who is at greatest risk of accessing or not accessing digital and remote services? And what did you aim to do here in this study?
Yeah, absolutely. So we know that the shift to remote digital healthcare is changing the landscape of primary care in the UK. We know that older adults, especially those who are facing socioeconomic deprivation, can have a lot of difficulty accessing these services. And prior research has shown that groups like the elderly, low-income, ethnic minorities have lower usage of digital health. And the obstacles to this include digital literacy, health literacy, lack of devices or internet connection, language barriers. But actually, in a recent narrative review that I published, I discussed how proposed solutions in the literature focused more on identifying and removing barriers. But the thing that was generally overlooked was the pervasive impact of multiple layers of disadvantage on people who are, you know, low income, elderly, limited English speaking. So my reason for wanting to do the study was to explore the lived experience of digital exclusion and to use an intersectional lens to examine the multidimensional cumulative impacts that this has on this target population. And also to explore if user personas can be created to support more equitable service redesign. I guess in summary, we know that health disparities in access to digital services are worsening among marginalized patients, especially the elderly facing socioeconomic deprivation. And granular qualitative insight and co-design solutions are kind of lacking in this space. So my study kind of aims to provide this bit.
Yeah, and you touched upon this idea of the user personas, and I think this is quite a unique method, and that's one of the reasons why we were quite excited about this paper. But can you talk us briefly through what you did to develop these user personas to help inform the design of more equitable services?
Yeah, absolutely. So user personas offered a methodology to synthesize the complex challenges authentically to inform service enhancements that came through in my study. So the personas distill this complex interview data into memorable, relatable archetypes. And this creates salient shorthand for referring to user needs and pain points when collaborating with stakeholders on solutions. So how they were created were they were constructed by analyzing the key themes and experiences described by my study participants during the in-depth interviews that I conducted. And then I used an intersectional lens to understand how factors like age, gender, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, digital literacy, that sort of thing combine to impact access to digital healthcare. So the qualitative data was coded and categorized to identify cross-cutting narratives. And these were integrated to make representative personas reflecting the multifaceted challenges that the participants were facing. And then the focus groups, we did have photo focus groups with providers and patients, and they gave feedback during the design process to refine the personas for relevance. The end case was four user personas that capture the variety of identities, social positions, and oppressions faced by participants. And these were reflecting varied experiences of disadvantage. So, for example, we have Saima, who is the one persona that's mentioned in the paper, who's an elderly dependent Pakistani woman. We also have Rajesh, a poor elderly Bangladeshi man, Geeta, who's an independent elderly Rajasthani woman who lives alone, and then Aziz, who is a resettled Afghani refugee. So trying to capture a lot of different experiences of disadvantage with the personas.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, these personas were developed on qualitative interviews that you did with, I think, was it 19 participants who experience disadvantage due to age and deprivation as well?
Yes, absolutely. So the study is part of a larger DPhil study to explore digital health disparities. And my methods are included in-depth interviews, ethnographic observations, and focus groups. So recruited patients who are 65 plus through purpose of sampling and had chronic conditions, lived in deprived areas, and spoke limited English. And they were recruited through NHS services, healthcare staff, and community organizations.
Mm-hmm. And these user personas really bring those experiences to life. So I think, as you mentioned, the example that you give of Saima in the paper is a really interesting one for those who want to go back and take a look at the paper.
Yeah. So with Saima's persona, I think her experience really illustrates several of the key challenges that can arise when transitioning older adults with limited technology literacy to digital health services. So, for example, like the shift from seeing a familiar GP in person to video consultations with unfamiliar doctors really disrupted continuity of care for Saima, which kind of comes through in the persona, hand in hand with the narrative portrait that goes with it. And then accompanying that is kind of like a descriptive text and narrative that kind of talks through the persona in that sense. So talking about some of the key challenges that come up with her persona in general. So things around continuity of care, disorientation, trust. So some of those themes.
And your results then look at the challenges that remote and digital services create for older people with these multiple markers of disadvantage. And I just wanted to talk through the findings. And first, as you mentioned, you talk about the sense of disorientation that patients feel. What did they describe here based on how they knew to access services in the past?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think the participants in our sample felt troubled seeing unfamiliar clinicians for the first time in the digital environment. So if we see in Saima's example, she talks about this strange floating face. And in contemporary digitized services, traditional continuity in which a single clinician supports the patient holistically through their illness trajectory is difficult to achieve and rarely found. Instead, there is, I guess, at best, a distributed continuity in which various services and providers contribute elements of care that are recorded on a shared patient record. And while this electronic record might create a more or less coherent digital, I guess, record of the patient experience, which allows different staff members to perceive the continuity from the patient's perspective, the input of multiple providers is experienced as fragmented care and kind of exacerbates their sense of disruption and fragmentation across different modes. And it's especially, for example, if we take a look at Saima, in terms of this disruption, the different inputs coming at one person who is already not that digital capacity causes a sense of disruption. And that was felt through all the patients at some level in my sample.
And the rollout of digital services had a really big impact on that personal relationship that patients valued with their clinicians. And I suppose you can understand that coming from that perspective as well.
Yeah. So the patients experience this lack of continuity of care, having to see unfamiliar clinicians remotely. And this did disrupt the therapeutic relationships, which is quite important for especially disadvantaged patients, because there's a lot of different aspects that go into it. For example, after Saima, if we take her, for example, after having the same GP for 15 years, she now feels disconnected from providers who don't know her medical history to that extent as her familiar GP. And this lack of personalized care makes her feel like just another patient rather than an individual with unique healthcare needs. For example, especially when it comes to relying on her son, because she's not able to speak English well enough to have conversations that really talk about the medical terminology or what she's feeling, that dependence kind of carries over in terms of she's not able to have those conversations with her doctors and her son instead has those. And she feels that this fast-paced consultations are not focused on understanding her, for example. And these negative experiences then damage Saima's trust in healthcare services and providers. And feeling like she has little control over her care has kind of bred this sense of mistrust as well. And this trust deficit discourages patients like Saima from further utilizing health services.
Yeah, and that final theme that you talk about in the paper looks at how some people felt disempowered and, as you say, distrustful of all these digital services. And it's interesting to link that back then to how patients may or may not access services in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was interesting because one of the quotes that came up in Saima's narrative was, after all, who am I? And I think this kind of showcases the low level of patient agency here, because in essence, all clinician-patient relationships are characterized by an unequal power distribution, since the clinician has this greater professional knowledge and holds ultimate control over decisions in terms of whether to prescribe or refer, the pace of the consultation in terms of how quickly the conversation runs, and time when the consultation ends. So this power imbalance kind of appear to be magnified in the digital environment, sometimes to the extent that the disadvantaged patient felt complete absence of agency and only engaged with care passively, if even at all.
All of these findings are actually quite worrying, really, if we think about the rapid rollout of digital services and how people who are already at disadvantage are also losing their voice then in how they can speak about their experiences and perhaps also limits their access. So it's quite worrying, actually, I have to say. And perhaps this kind of paper gives us time to pause and reflect on what the role of these services actually means for patients.
Absolutely.
So finally, what do you think we could be doing better? And I know that in the paper, then you focus on this. So how could we be trying to serve these patient groups better in our practices?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very important question. And so a couple things. So I think in terms of, if we talk about the implications for practice, one of the important ones here would be additional resources and support that's likely needed for practices that are serving especially disadvantaged patient populations to address their distinct needs and challenges with digital services. So this includes technical assistance, as well as accommodations like interpreters, bilingual advocates, and simplified platforms. And then when we think about traditional continuity of care with a known provider, perhaps it should be prioritized for multiply disadvantaged patients before introducing phone or video follow-ups. So early in-person visits can actually establish therapeutic relationships and trust that's needed to support patient engagement for future virtual modalities. And another thing to think about is perhaps coding systems and alerts and reasonable adjustments to identify vulnerable patients, which can then prompt staff awareness and tailored service adjustment to meet their needs. At the same time, it's important to recognize that disadvantage intersects uniquely in each person. So flexible, personalized support is still required. But then also in terms of digital literacy training, local community IT hubs with healthcare assistance support and user-centered design of interfaces can really boost disadvantaged patients' ability to utilize digital services independently and confidently. And over here, I would say that multilingual, low literacy resources are key. But I think if findings on declining trust and engagement among this patient population are replicated, the purely digital-first approach might actually worsen disparities. So a balance of digital and in-person care is needed to support this group in particular, because sometimes incentives that are promoting access and rapid assessments and time-saving workarounds could actually divert resources from the relational trust-building care that patients need for engagement with services and health improvements. So adjustments to standards around efficiency might actually be something that needs to be looked at in the future, because in essence, practices kind of need to thoughtfully re-engineer the care pathways to uphold relationship-based, patient-centered primary care for their most vulnerable service users, as we see that digital solutions are expanding, and not addressing these unique needs might end up exacerbating disparities.
I think with the really rapid rollout of digital services so quickly around the COVID pandemic, it almost feels like this is a chance to give pause for thought and think about how we're really setting up these systems to ensure that they are equitable for these different populations. Because as you say, if we don't sit back and think about what we're doing, there's a chance that some people are going to be left behind. And that's quite dangerous, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think that what you've told us about what we can do in terms of resources and support for disadvantaged populations is really important. So hopefully that will be a really key take home for people who are listening. But I just wanted to say, yeah, that's been a really great chat. So thank you very much for joining me here to talk about this study today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you all very much for your time here and for listening to this BJGP podcast. The original research article can be found on bjgp.org, and the show notes and podcast audio can be found at bjgplife.com. And if you're interested in hearing more about current research, especially focusing on marginalized and disadvantaged communities, please do join us at the BJGP Research Conference, which is being held on the 22nd of March in London. We have a big focus on marginalized communities in this conference program, and it would be great to meet some of you there. Thanks again, and bye.